All right, you guys, welcome to another bonus episode of Controversial Thoughts, straight out of Hogwarts. I realized after I did the last one that there were two key issues that I did not address in that video or podcast that was nevertheless 26 minutes long. So the first question is something I got from a friend of mine, and he sent me this article on Yahoo. And I've heard more and more people being concerned about this concept of long COVID. Number of COVID-19 long haulers, survivors experiencing lasting virus symptoms is growing. And I think that though my heart goes out to many of these individuals, I think we must be very careful with the mainstream narrative that, of course, which is going to be that they were all otherwise healthy. I will remind you guys of something that I spoke about with Ivor Cummins on that podcast, which was this discussion of Joseph Kraft and the work of the EuroAspire study. Joseph Kraft says those with cardiovascular disease not identified with diabetes are simply undiagnosed. I think we could make a controversial statement, which may be wrong. I reserve the rights to be wrong, but let's make a statement. My hypothesis would be that those healthy individuals diagnosed with severe COVID were not actually healthy in the first place. They were either overtrained athletes who were significantly immunologically compromised, or those with underlying metabolic dysfunction that our mainstream Western medicine has no ability to detect because our tools are too blunt. How many physicians look at fasting insulin? Okay. So that's the first piece. The second piece is, with all the empathy going out to these long haulers with COVID, I believe we may find that the majority of them also have underlying metabolic dysfunction. Let's look at the EuroAspire study, which essentially found that of those who were admitted with cardiovascular disease, there was a set of known diabetics, there were more diabetics, and there were even more diabetics when they looked more closely and more closely at measures of dysglycemia. And if fasting insulin had been tested, what more of this pie would have been filled in with people who were actually pre-diabetic, some level of pre-diabetes? At what point along the metabolic dysfunction continuum does your immune system become impaired? And are you at risk for either a severe COVID outcome or a severe long COVID outcome? Now, do I think that we should ignore these outcomes? No. I think we should put them in context. And I don't think the media is doing that. You guys all know the media always tries to tell us the story of kids who are clearly obese, sadly, who die from COVID and they say they're healthy, or have type 1 diabetes when they get to the hospital and they say they're healthy. Clearly, many sad individuals have passed who are termed healthy, who were quite obese, just because they didn't have a hemoglobin A1C that satisfied the diabetes criteria or a fasting glucose measured on routine blood work. Doesn't mean their fasting insulin wasn't elevated. Doesn't mean their postprandial glucose response wouldn't have shown some underlying metabolic dysfunction, which was correlated with immunologic dysfunction, as I spoke about in the video yesterday. So I think we have to be very careful. And to me, the media reports seem extremely fraught with logical fallacies, jumping to conclusions, which wouldn't be surprising. They're trying to create fear because fear gets eyeballs. So YouTube's trying to do the same thing. I just want to quell the fear a little bit. As Ivor and I said in the past, flatten the fear just a tad and put this in context. Any of these individuals who had severe COVID and were otherwise healthy, I would love to see their blood work. In fact, all I really want to see is a fasting insulin, which we can't get because it's hard to go back in time. But I would accept a fasting insulin after they've recovered from COVID, or even a fasting insulin in their convalescent period with long haul COVID. Now, you could argue their fasting insulin might be elevated because their immune system is activated because long haul COVID is persistently besieging them. Fair. But at some level, they're in the hospital. What are they fed in the hospital? Nothing, in my opinion, that is going to improve their metabolic health. And is metabolic health one of the metrics we look at on a daily basis in hospitalized patients? It's not. We don't go to do rounds on patients on the internal medicine service. or the surgery service or any of these services, which we all rotate on in medical school and residency, or the neurology service, or any of these services, and say, what's the patient's fasting insulin this week versus last week? What are we feeding the patient? What's their weight? Have we looked at visceral adipose tissue this week? Did we do DEXA? Are they getting more metabolically healthy? Is anybody checking their CRP on a weekly or daily basis? What direction are we putting their immune system in connection with their metabolic health? These are not metrics that we use in the hospital. Therefore, we're destined to fail. What sort of advice do patients like many of those I just showed you with long haul COVID get when they leave the hospital? Eat low fat, avoid saturated fat, and whatever you do, avoid red meat. But those seed oils, they're okay. Maybe a little bit of, you know, Coke, Diet Coke, that's fine. Just don't eat that saturated fat. When is the physician who follows them going to check a fasting insulin? There's no metric. So this is really just embarrassing. And I think that this is my hypothesis for what's going on with long haul COVID, and what's going on with these so-called healthy cases of COVID, which means if you don't know what your fasting insulin is, you better go do that. Unless you are very lean, super healthy, and you've had a trek recently, if your fasting insulin is greater than 5, that's not ideal. I recently, over a year ago, I did a debate with a nutrition PhD. And in that debate, I asked him, what was your fasting insulin? He didn't know the answer to that question, so he made something else in the interview. He said, it's in the middle of the range. Well, the range for fasting insulin is from 3 micro IU to 24 micro IU per ml. So if you're in the middle of that range and your fasting insulin is 12 or 14 or 16, you are headed for a wreck. And I wish I'd called him on that at that time, and I will in the future when we debate. But I thought that was very interesting, and I thought about it after the fact, all these things you think about after debate. But know what your fasting insulin is. What a better marker. Is there a better marker for insulin sensitivity? I'm not sure there is, at least an easily obtainable one, other than a Kraft test or an OGTT or a CGM. So if your fasting insulin is above 5 to 8, I'm not super worried. Above 8, then I'm thinking something is going on. Got to make some changes. And the interventions that I have seen most helpful are removal of polyunsaturated fatty acids, improving body composition, which certainly could be getting your calories under control by eliminating some calories. I won't deny that calories in, calories out works. I just think it's a very flawed, limited model, because clearly the quality of the calories in affects things on the overall system of the body. And that system seems to ignore that, right? And I don't think there's really good evidence to show that all of the improvements people experience immunologically and autoimmune things are due to weight loss. I can't even tell you how many people I've worked with who had significant autoimmune improvements with absolutely no weight loss by changing their diet and removing the most offending plant foods. So the calories in, calories out hypothesis is intriguing, but sadly quite limited. And those who adhere to it religiously, I think, are quite myopic. I respect their opinions, but it's a bummer. I will also say that in general, immunologically, you can improve without losing a bit of weight by removing offending antigens. If you want to see the which plants are most toxic, that video is at the heartandsoil.co website. As I said on the presentation yesterday, we've got ImmunoMilk coming in the next couple of weeks. I'm super excited about a couple of studies I found that I'll be talking about more, showing that colostrum, bovine colostrum, was as effective as flu vaccine in preventing flu in 2 cohorts. Now, is it a perfect study? No. Would you rather take colostrum than get a flu vaccine? Or would you do both if that was your grandma? You might just, whatever you want to do to protect them or protect yourself in the best way possible. If you look at the data, it's not enough there to say for sure, but there's some indication that colostrum might be better than a flu vaccine. So hopefully that's helpful for you guys. ImmunoMilk coming soon. Heartandsoil.co. Beef organs coming back real soon. Heart of the Warrior coming real soon. I know I keep saying that. It's coming in the next 2 weeks. I'm taking a mulligan for overpromising and underdelivering. It's my fault. I just want to get it to you guys because I know you like it. I know it benefits you all. We ran into problems with supply, but by the beginning of December, we're going to have that in limited stock. We prepare for limited releases. So we'll let you guys all know. And we're just excited that all of you guys are benefiting from No Sales Nutrition. Thanks for being a part of the remembering. Love you all.